And then after that, we will start with the 8th chapter when we reassemble on 26th, 27th probably. So we completed the part about demigod worship. Now we start with the part about Mayavadi. Avyaktam vyaktima pannam.
Avyaktam vyaktima pannam.
Manyante mama buddhayaha.
Manyante mama buddhayaha.
Param bhavam ajananto.
Param bhavam ajananto.
Amave manuttamam.
Amave manuttamam.
So, this is quite a strong verse, because the previous verse used the word alpamedhasaha, less intelligent. And this verse uses a stronger word abuddhayaha, not less intelligent, but no intelligence. So, who are the people whom Krishna is calling as no, having no intelligence at all? Is those avyaktam yattimapannam. Those who think manyante ma. Manyante ma means they think me to be. What? That I was unmanifest before and now I became manifest. So, param bhavam ajananto. They do not understand my transcendental nature. Mama me manuttamam. Mama aveyam. That actually I am imperishable and I am the best. I am beyond all material. Ignorance, the ignorance of material existence, uttama, anuttama, systematically, thoroughly I am beyond that. So actually, the Mayavadis have to do a lot of jugglery to try to get around this verse. And although Sanskrit does not have the kind of punctuations, like you say have exclamation mark or comma, or things like that are not there. What they try to do is, they try to put a comma after avyaktam. It means, although I am unmanifest, foolish people think me to be manifest. So, they completely turn the meaning around 180 degrees. Now, is it a valid interpretation? Well, as far as grammar is concerned, anybody can do anything with grammar. But then we have to look at the overall flow of the Gita. Just in this very 7th chapter, Krishna said in 7.7, Mattaha parataram nahanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya. So when he said, there is no truth higher than me, what does it mean? It is very clear that Krishna is referring to himself over there. Similarly, at the end of this chapter, 7.30, Krishna will establish that I am the supreme, sadhi, bhutadi, I am completely beyond material nature. And just a couple of the verse after this, Krishna will tell, two verses after, the Vedaham samatitani, I know everything, past, present and future. There is no question of Krishna being the Brahman in contact with Maya. So, by grammatical jugglery, one can do anything that one wants. But one has to see the overall context of the Gita. And if we look at what Krishna is telling, this sort of grammatical jugglery is not justifiable also. So normally speaking, if we have to understand a verse, what are the ways in which we understand it? Okay. So, did I talk about a Tatparya Linga in my Ishapushak course? Pakrapo Samhara Adhyasa Purvata. I talked about that, no? So, what we are discussing now is
that a book has, right?
Yeah, how to understand the meaning. We are discussing whether 7.24 interpretation as avyaktam vyaktimapannam. That avyaktam, comma, vyaktimapannam. I am unmanifest. But foolish people think me to be manifest. Whether that is a defensible, that is a legitimate interpretation. So, as I said, by grammatical analysis, one can get any meaning out of anything. So, what is more important in the grammar is the overall context. what we are trying to do is now, you will see how this gets applied in this context. So upakrama is
beginning,
start. So clearly the Bhagavad Gita starts with two living beings exist. There is Krishna and there is Arjuna, and Arjuna is surrendering to Krishna. So if you look at the start of the Bhagavad Gita, setting itself, and then the first instruction, 2.12. What is that? Natvevaham jatunasi. Very clear. That is all actually refuting Mayavad. The setting and the starting. Then if you look at Upasamhara, Upasamhara means end. So if you look at the end, what is Krishna telling? 18.65 is very clear. Always think of me, become my devotee, surrender to me. So Krishna's instructions come in that this is what is the highest thing that I am telling you. Actually 64 to 66 it is. 64 Krishna says that, now I will tell you the highest knowledge. And what is the knowledge? Always think of me. Know where Krishna is telling you. Think, become me. And 66 Krishna is making more emphatic by saying, this is the highest knowledge. Best dharma. Nothing else that you can do. And then later, if you look at 18.73, is it 72 or 73? 73. So 18.73 is Karishye Vachanam Tava. Arjuna is not telling what he's not saying soham or anything like that. He's clearly telling, I will do what you say. There is a oneness in will, oneness in intention. There is no oneness in identity. Now, abhyasa. Abhyasa means repetition. Apurvata is uniqueness. So these are the tatparya lingam. So now if you look at abhyasa, we will find what is repeated. What does anyone remember till now, roughly, what are the references to the personal aspect of Krishna that have come till now in the Gita? We start with 2.61, Matparaha. Then we have 3.30, Mai Sarvani Karmani. Then we have the whole section of 4.5 to 15, where Krishna is establishing himself as the avatar. And you have to know me, especially in this. 4.9 is very important, because that you know my birth and activities. Krishna is not saying, you know my impersonal nature and you become liberated. My birth and activities. So Krishna is talking about his personality over there. And similarly, 4.35 is there. The effect of knowledge is what Krishna is telling? That, yajnatvana punarmoham evam yasyasi pandava yena bhutanya sheshani drakshasya atmani atho mai. You will see that all living beings are in me. They are mine. Doesn't say that. Actually, that we will all become one. No, he says that you all belong to me. Then again, in the fifth chapter, we have 5.29. Goktaram yagyatapasam.
Nine.
Nine is the most emphatic verse, I think. Yeah. 4.5 to 50 is all talking about Krishna's transcendence. But emphatic from the point of refuting Mayavad is Krishna is saying, how will you become liberated and come out of this mortal existence? By knowing my activities, not by my impersonal nature behind my activities. Krishna is telling my activities. So it's very clear. Then in the sixth chapter we discuss there are many sections where Krishna's personal aspect is talked about. 6.15 is Matparaha. That is why one talks about him as the object of meditation. 6.14 and 15. Then there is Mat references are there. Then there is 6.30, 31. Then Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra Sarvam Chamai Pashyati. Then there is 6.47, Yoginam Api Sarvesham. Then there is 7.1 was Mai Asakta Manaha. So Krishna is telling Mai Asakta Manaha. He is not saying beyond me something you have to become attached to. So it's very clear. And there is 7.7 we discussed in this chapter. Mattaha parataram naane. There is nothing higher than me. Then there is 7.14 where Krishna is saying, by surrendering to me, you will become free from Maya. Not that by going, by thinking of some impersonal aspect within me, but by surrendering to me. Then in this chapter itself, we see, Krishna said that I know everything, past, present and future. So it is not that I was a pure consciousness before and now I have taken a form. No. I know past, present and future. That means I exist in past, present and future. Then 7.30 will be Sadi Bhutadi Daivam Mam Sadi Agyam Chavim. Krishna said that I am the supreme among Adibhut, Adidaiva and Adiyagya. What are these concepts we will discuss later. And then like this, if we go forward, actually throughout the chapters, we will see that 8.14 Krishna says, you become liberated from material existence by fixing your mind on me. That is the easiest way. Tasyaham sulabha partha nitya yukta suyoginaha. So, there are many other verses. We will come to this once again. I'll just do a rough sketching here. Then we have what Krishna is telling in 9th chapter is, he is telling several verses. First of all, 9.11, Avajananti Maam Mudha, and then Mokhasha Moha Karman. It's very strong verses. 9.12 is there. And this whole section is very personalistic. Because Krishna is telling that if you become my devotee, 9th chapter is. Then if you go forward, in 10.8 Krishna is telling, everything comes from me. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. Sarvasya would be in impersonal form also. And Krishna is saying, aham. Not from somewhere within me something is coming. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. And Krishna also says, the person who knows me is wise. And then what is Arjuna's conclusion when he finishes this? Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavam. Param Brahma he says. That you are the supreme truth. So that is 10.12. And then he is telling, I know everything. I accept everything that you say. Not just I accept some things. I accept everything in total that you say. And then further in the 10th chapter, Krishna gives the Vibhuti Yoga. And then he says in 10.42 that this whole material existence is sustained by a fragment of me. By only a fragment. So he's not saying that it is that actually I exist only in the material world and beyond that something is there. No. It exists only as a fragment within me. Then if we go to the 11th chapter, Krishna is telling about how he can be known only by bhakti and by no other means. Naham vedai na tapasanadani na chejaya and bhaktyatma nanya shakyaham vem vidho arjuna. So this is 11.53 and 54 where it tells that the only way to know me is by bhakti. And if you go to the 12th chapter, there is a direct question like Arjuna. Which is better, to worship you in your impersonal aspect or your personal aspect? And actually Krishna's answer is very unambiguous. The whole section 12.1-7 which talks about this. And then 13 to 18 chapter actually are the chapters which deal with the Jnana section. And they would seem to give some credence to the impersonalist ideas. But even within those chapters, Krishna repeatedly talks about how bhakti to him is important. Madbhava yopapadyate. So for example, maicha ananya yogena bhakti rogya vichari, he describes. One has to perform unbreakable devotional service. Then of course we have the 14th chapter, three modes of material nature. And what does Krishna say? How does one go beyond these three modes? Mahamcha yoga vicharena. So, by my bhakti you go beyond the modes. It is not by some impersonal jnana. And beyond that, he said, brahmanohi pratishtaham. So, 14.26.27. So, there he is telling that actually speaking, it is the Brahman is supported by me. Brahman rests on me. Not that I am emerging from the Brahman. I am the higher reality. 15th chapter is called as Purushottam Yoga. And actually Purushottam Yoga, there is this whole section from what our acharyas have called, the 10.8 to 11 is called as the Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita. Our acharyas have called 15.16 to 18 as the Trishloki Bhagavad Gita. And then it has its conclusion in 15.19 also. All these three verses are very strongly personalistic. But 15.19, what does Krishna say? Yomam eva asammoodho jānāti purushottamam. स सर्ववित् भजति माम सर्वभावेन भारत सर्वभावेन भारत ही वॉचिंग मी होल हार्टेडली राइट वन हू अंडरस्टैंड्स मी टू बी पुरुषोत्तम स सर्ववित् सो ही हैज कंप्लीट नॉलेज ही वर्शिप्स मी विद कंप्लीट डिवोशन दैट वे इफ वी सी कृष्णा इज वेरी वेरी क्लियर दैट ही इज द सुप्रीम बीइंग and then if we move forward the 16th chapter is about daiva asura sampad vibhagayo so krishna is talking over there that people have to surrender to me they have to worship me and only they follow my scripture which I have given me then they will make advancement otherwise they will fall back into material existence in the 17th chapter talks about different kinds of sacrifices so in the 16th chapter where krishna refers to himself in a personal sense of agency is in verses 18 and 19 where he's talking about how he's not just a figurative concept of the controller he is beyond the laws of karma and it is he who gives punishment according to laws of karma so the mayavadi idea is that the ishwar is also within the material world but he is a tool to go beyond the material world then in the 17th chapter krishna talks about Oma and the sacrifices. But there he clearly tells that actually the sacrifices are a manifestation of himself. So there are several verses for that. We'll discuss that probably in 17.6 and 7. And then of course, in the 18th chapter again there are several verses. But the most strong verses would be, we discussed in the conclusion 64 to 66. But apart from that there is 54 and 55 which are very very strong. 54 and 55 are what? Brahmano hi pratishtaham. That is the perfection of Brahman realization. Brahmano hi pratishtaham. No, Brahman hi pratishtaham. Brahma bhuta prasannatma. Ashochiti na kamshati sama sarveshu bhuta. These three lines are describing the perfection of Brahman realization. But after that Krishna is telling, mad bhaktim labhate param. Like a devastating verse for the Mayavadis. And then Krishna says, as if that is not enough, you'll get perfect bhakti and after that bhakta mam abhijanati how will I be known? Only by bhakti not by anything else so in this way if we see actually if you look at the abhyasa, the repetition within the Bhagavad Gita, it's very clear that the messages are only personalistic and impersonalistic messages that are there they are few impersonal verses that are there, they are few and they are never described to the supreme reality in the Bhagavad Gita Now if you look at the apurvata, apurvata means uniqueness. So what is unique in the Bhagavad Gita as compared to other scriptures? One of the most unique factors of the Bhagavad Gita is that it is Krishna's self-revelation. See the other Puranas, okay there are some sages who are discussing and they are saying okay this Devata is supreme, that Devata is supreme. But it is Krishna's self-revelation which comes throughout the Gita again and again and again. Which is supreme, which is unique in the Gita. Why is it unique? Because there are only two ways to look at Krishna's self-revelation. Krishna is saying, Aham sarvasya prabhu matta sarvam pravartate. Either Krishna is a liar or he is God. There are only two ways of looking at it. There is no third way. So, actually speaking, if you look at the way all the sages have approached him, they have seen him as the supreme absolute truth. Now there are several places in the scriptures where sometimes some devatas are also referred to as supreme. But it's very rare that the devata himself will say that I am supreme. And that too throughout a book again and again and again. So Chakravarti Pada, for example, in the 7th canto, when Hiranyakashipu is praying to Brahmaji, he actually talks to Brahmaji as if Brahmaji is only supreme. The prayers of the 7th canto that are there. And Brahmaji appears before him. So, Chakravarti Pada and Acharya explained that actually Brahma, Hiranyakashipu is by no means an authentic devotee, nor is an Acharya of Vedic knowledge. You know, he is simply a person with a demoniac mentality out to get his end served. So, for that purpose, he is flattering Brahmaji by glorifying him as if he is supreme. So, Brahmaji does not say, and if you look at the careful response, what does Brahmaji doesn't say over there? Oh, Hiranyakashipu, you have understood the truths of life very nicely. You realize my supreme position. Yes. May you be blessed. You know, contrast this with when Indra, Brahma offer prayers to Krishna in the 10th canto. What does Krishna tell? Actually, Krishna responds. Krishna tells Indra, don't become proud. Go back to your position, but avoid pride. So actually, Krishna also says that, you know, you have been given your post by me. So I am the supreme. You should not forget this. So the apurvata of the Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's repeated self-declaration of his supremacy. So when he self-declares himself to be a supreme, there are only two options. Either it is the truth, it can either be true or it can be false. So now no acharya in any sampradaya has said that Krishna, what he is speaking is false. So if we say that what Krishna is saying is false, then we are going entirely outside the Vedic authority itself. So now, what the different acharyas and different sampradayas are saying, what do Krishna's words mean? They may interpret Krishna's words. Okay, this means this. But nobody has said that Krishna is saying that he is supreme. He is flattered. He is bragging or anything like that. So, the apurvata of the Bhagavad Gita is that God himself is repeatedly declaring his supremacy. Now, is this God bragging? Why does he have to talk about his own supremacy? Oh, he is not bragging, he is enlightening. What is the meaning of enlightening? If a patient is terribly sick, and a patient needs to take a treatment to get cured, but is not ready to take the treatment, at that time, if the doctor is very competent, very experienced, very expert, the doctor has to tell his credentials to the patient. Do you know I have cured thousands of people? I have done surgeons all over the world. All the best surgeons in this country have been my students, have been trained by me. And I am telling you, you need to do this too. So, when he tells that, what is the purpose? The purpose is not to boast his glories, but to ensure the patient takes the treatment seriously. Similarly, when Krishna is talking about his own group, his own supreme position, that is not out of his own egomania. That is out of his concern for Arjuna, that Arjuna get properly guided and elevated. So, actually speaking, the Bhagavad Gita can be twisted by anybody in any way, but that sort of twisting is possible only when one neglects the consistent and insistent message of the Gita. It's consistent. Consistent means it's repeated again and again and again. So, but along with that, it is consistent. What is the meaning of insistent? Insistent means it's very, very strong, strongly worded. Gita is personalistic. Insistent means, if you say Krishna, if you talk about Bhakta Vatsalya, Priyoham Sarva Dharmantarittya Ishtosime Dhrudhamiti. Now, when we come to those particular verses in the Gita, we'll see that actually these are very intensely personal verses where Krishna is expressing his emotions. So, it's an insistent message of Krishna. It's consistent and it's insistent message. So, therefore, what Srila Prabhupada is giving us is the not only the logical translation, it is the only valid translation. So, avyaktam vyaktimapannam, that I was unmanifest and I became manifest. Those who think like this, manyante, ma abuddhayaha, they are foolish. Why? Parambhava majanam, they did not know my transcendental nature. So, I mentioned this in the Ishopanishad course. What is this Mayavadi idea? Does anyone remember? This avyaktam vyaktim apannam. What is this? What is the Mayavadi idea exactly? What does it mean? I was unmanifest and I became manifest before. I became manifest. So actually, the Mayavadi idea is there is Nirguna Brahma. And what happens to Nirguna Brahma? When it is comes in contact with mode of goodness, what does it become? It becomes Jagadish. Becomes the absolute truth, the Ishvara. When this in turn, okay, what will do this? Okay. So when Nirgun Brahma plus Root of Goodness becomes Jagat, Jagdish. Then Nirgun Brahma plus Jagdish plus mode of passion, that becomes Jiva. That is their idea. And then that Nirgun Brahma plus mode of goodness plus mode of passion plus mode of ignorance, that becomes the Jagat. So this is how they see this whole Tattvatraya. Jagat, Jeev and Jagdish, all three are the products of Maya. All three are the products of Maya. So this Jagadish they call as Sagun Brahma. Actually the original reality of the Absolute Truth according to them is Nirgun Brahma, that's avyakta, is unmanifest. That I become manifest. So this is their idea. First of all, this idea doesn't have any scriptural basis, certainly not in the Bhagavad Gita nor in the other scriptures. There may be certainly impersonalistic verses in the Upanishads, but impersonalism itself is not a license or a justification for Mayavad, which says all these three categories are entirely illusory and the only reality is the one consciousness without any object or subject. So what this verse is saying is avyaktam yaktimapannam. So that I was unmanifest and I became manifest. The transcendental Brahman took on a form. Manyantema avudhyaha. Why? Because actually, as Baldev Devashin establishes in Vidhapakon Devashin, that actually this Nirguna Brahma itself is Bhagavan. Nirguna Brahma means what? That Brahman which is beyond, which is transcendental to material nature. It is not that it has no qualities, but it has no material qualities. So actually they think that this form is material, but param bhava majananto. They don't know my param bhava. Mama avyaya anuttamam. So I am avyaya, I am anuttamam. I am beyond darkness, I am beyond the darkness of material existence, and I am beyond time. So now this verse is actually speaking from the looking of the context of the Gita, it's very, very clear what it is meaning. Any questions about this?
This verse structure
is about Mayavad. Specifically about Mayavad.
Okay. But then you also said that all this together is considered as all this together is considered as Maya.
Yeah. So, what is the Mayavadi idea exactly? That all conceptions of duality are false. Duality means two-ness. So, I am sitting here, you are sitting there. So, I can perceive you, you can perceive me. So, this sense of two-ness, wherever it is there, it is false. The only reality is oneness. So then they say, in the two-ness that we see, there are different kind of entities or objects. So one kind of entity is the living entities. Another kind of object is matter. Another kind of entity is the worshipable devas and the Ishwar. So all these three are ultimately Maya. And ultimately, all have to go beyond this. So the Mayavadi is, this is their idea of how that Brahman somehow morphs means changes into Jagat, Jagdish and Jiva. So this, as I said, has no basis in scripture. But what is more important is their idea is ultimately all three are illusion. The Vaishnava understanding is all three are real. But what is the mistake is, for the jiva to neglect the Jagdish and try to enjoy the Jagat. That is the mistake. But all three are here. Is clear?
How would that explain about the mode of events or the mode of self-esteem in the world? So that if you're going to have that back from the contact with mode of events, that becomes a good number and then more passion.
How would they explain the existence of the modes? That is what you remember we discussed about the difference between Anirvachaniya and Achintya. Were you there at that time? Okay, we discussed that elaborately. So first they say that it is Anirvachaniya. You cannot know about it. It is beyond words. So it is about our unknowability. But afterwards they change that concept into a category. Okay, it's something which cannot be known. That is the inability of for us to know. But from a conceptual category, they make it into an ontological category. That means this is one category of existence. So there is illusion, there is Brahman, and there is Anirvachani. And Anirvachani, there is Maya, then Jiva also goes into there, Jagdish also goes into there ultimately. So what happens is, there Anirvachaniya is a contra-scriptural and a logical conception. So that is something which there's a question answer on this on my website also. You can hear that in detail because we almost took half a class on this topic. Also, I gave a Brahmachari class also. I talked about this only. That will also be there. So let's move forward now. So now, in case somebody has some doubts, the next verses will still make things clear. So now these two categories of people, what is the flow going on in the chapter till now? Let's go back a little bit to understand the flow. So the flow of the Gita is, first verse 1 to 12, which says, know me in full. You know me, then you will know that by surrendering to me, you will get free from Maya. So first there is knowledge about Krishna, then there is a recommendation, surrender to me. Then there are different people who take different options. 7.15 talks about those who don't surrender. 16 to 19 talk about those who gradually surrender. Then 20 to 24 is talking about those who surrender but to something else. Those who take shelter of something else. So now, this category of 20 to 24 requires an explanation. Why do these people not surrender? Why don't they understand your glory? So in one sense, 7.25, the verse which we will discuss now, is very similar to 7.30. We'll recite this verse and then we'll discuss the difference. Maham prakasha sarvasya.
Maham prakasha sarvasya.
Yoga maya samavritaha.
Yoga maya samavritaha.
Udho yam nabhi janati.
Udho yam nabhi janati.
Loko mavajamavyayam.
Loko mavajamavyayam.
So naham prakasha sarvasya, that I am not illuminated to everyone. Why? Yoga maya samavrita. I am covered by yoga maya. Mudho yam na vijana. Therefore the mudhas do not know me. What do they not know about me? Loko ma ajivamgaya. That I am unborn and imperishable. I am beyond time. So ajivamgaya, I am beyond time. This is actually in one sense similar to what he is talking about, parambhava jananto. They don't know my transcendental nature. What is the transcendental nature? That I am beyond time. Now, what was 7.13 saying? Tribhir gunamayir bhave evi sarvam jagat mohitam na vijanati mamebhyam paramaube. That actually I cannot be known because I am covered by the three modes. So, in one sense, the verse is similar. But the emphasis is slightly different. There what was happening, Krishna was telling about how he permeates everything. 7.7 was saying Sutre Mani Ganaiva. I am the thread underlying all the necklace of existence. Then how he is the essence of everything was talked from 7.8 to 11. And then in 7.12, Krishna gave a summary that all three modes, all existences come from him. And then Arjuna has a question, okay, why don't people, if you are the essence of everything, why don't people perceive me? It's because of the covering of the three modes of material nature. And now, after that, Krishna said, by surrender one can become free from this. And then he's talked about the whole concept of surrender. And now he's concluding by saying, why don't people surrender? Because of yoga maya. So now, here interesting question comes up. Krishna has talked over there about three modes, people not being able to see him because of three modes. Now here Krishna is talking about people not being able to see him because of yoga maya. So, is Maya, now this verse has several important issues. Let's look at them one by one. It's interesting Krishna uses the word Yoga Maya over there. So why yoga maya? Actually, from the point of view of
Krishna, both energies are same.
From the point of view of Krishna, there is no difference between yoga maya and mahamaya. It's only one energy. Yoga Maya, because it's just one energy from Krishna's perspective. Another point is that here in the previous verse was Tribhir Guna Maya Bhavat. Mohitam Navijanati. People do not know. Here Mudhoyam Navijanati. So overall the emphasis is the same. But here, there the focus was on the people being unable to know. Here the focus of Krishna is my own unknowability. So it's like if there's a cloud. Now the cloud, from the people's point of view, it covers the sun. But from the sun's point of view, it is not covered. The sun is never covered by the cloud because the cloud is very small as compared to the sun. But still, from the people's point of view, the cloud has covered the sun. So, because this energy is referring to the covering over Krishna, although it's not actual covering over Krishna, apparent covering over Krishna. So, Maya in itself refers to how we get covered. Mama Maya Duratya Krishna. We get covered. But because this is referring to Krishna getting covered, although Krishna is actually not covered. So that's why Krishna is called Yoga Maya Samadha. And so that is the apparent implication that Krishna is covered. It is not actually that Krishna is covered, but there is at least an implication over there apparently that Krishna is being covered. That's why Yoga Maya word is used over. Now, beyond this, what is the relationship between Maya and the three modes of material nature? 7.13 said that Krishna is saying that I am not known because I am covered by Maya. Because the three modes are obscuring. One three. We discussed this already. So, actually there is a chain of command over here. Chain of command that causes delusion. So here what we are discussing is what is the relationship between Maya and the modes of material nature. So, if you remember the Bhagavad Gita picture, you see there is Krishna, then there is Maya, then there are three ropes coming down and the living entity is being pulled. So actually, the topmost in this whole hierarchy is Krishna. But Krishna is not directly involved. So Krishna is first, second is Maya. So Maya controls the living entities through the three modes, and the three modes act on us through the mind. So therefore, functionally, mind is equal to Maya. Ontologically means from the point of view of existence. Mind is an element, it's a subtle element. It is like a computer program. Whereas Maya is like is the is a
conscious person. Acting as Krishna's agent.
So my mind is a subtle element. So ontologically there's a practical, there's a huge amount of difference. So I'll explain this whole thing. From the point of view of existence, there are different things. The mind is what? The mind is subtle element. Subtle, it's matter, subtle material element. And Maya is an energy. She is Durga Devi. She is the consort of Lord Shiva. And she has the service of tempting the soul so that they realize the futility of the temptations and turn towards Krishna, ultimately. But she is a person. The mind is not a person. Although we may sometimes personalize it to realize how it is dangerous and how we have to protect ourselves from it. So in this chain of command, from Maya exerts her influence through the modes. And the modes are also subtle. Because they are subtle, they cannot act on the gross body. They may have gross effects. For example, if I become passionate, then I may start sweating, I may start breathing fast, certain hormones may start getting secreted in the body of a person who has become passionate. But those are the gross effects. But the modes primarily act on the mind. The chain of command is how? From Maya through the modes to the mind. And from the mind, it will come to the gross body. So now what we do is,
so actually speaking, in the condition stage, the soul is over here.
Conditioned soul is below. Actually, we are controlled by our mind right now. So we can try to fight with the mind at our level, but it is difficult. But if we take shelter of Krishna, then Krishna tells Maya, hold back. And Maya doesn't let the illusion come. And then we are protected by that. So surely taking shelter of Krishna also involves some fighting. But that fighting is much more easy as compared to the fighting against the mind independently. And in Sanat Kumar, in the 22nd chapter of the 4th canto, is instructing Prithu Maharaj. So there he compares these two methods. One is trying to fight and control the mind by analysis. And the other is to surrender to the Lord.
So it's a nice verse. I mean, let's recite the words also.
So, this is good to understand this now. Father Pankaji Parashvila Sabhatya Parmashana Nirtita Matgrata Yanti Santaha Padvanna Ritta Matayo Yatayo Vaga. Okay. Yeah, these are two nice verses here only. This 422, 39, 40.
यत्पाद पंकज पलाश विलास भक्त्या कर्माशयं ग्रदितमुद्ग्रतयन्ति संतः तद्वन्न रिक्तमतयो यतयो विरुद्धः श्रोतो गणस्तमरणं भज वासुदेवम्
So, he's comparing two kinds of people over here. Let's go from down. Tadvan means those kind of people. Nariktamatayo, that kind of success is not achieved by the Riktamatayo. It's a very graphic phrase. Matayo is mati, intelligence or consciousness. Rikta means empty. Maya was the impersonal, the guys are trying to think of nothing. So, they are trying to empty their mind. They are trying to empty their mind. Riktamatayo. So Vishwanath Thakur says in his purport that they have no object to focus their thoughts on. They have only objects to avoid and evade. They don't have objects to focus on. Riktamatayo. Their minds are empty. And what happens? Yatayo. They are renunciates. Ruddha. They are trying hard. But Srotoganas. Sroto ganas means is the material desires are like waves. So actually the mind is like an ocean and the waves coming keep coming up in it. So how much can one fight or stop the waves of a river or ocean? So if I decide that I will try to stop the flow of a river, stop the flow of an ocean, that's very difficult. Tamaranam, it's aranam, it's not possible. Bhaja Vasudevam. Therefore worship Lord Vasudev. And what happens by worshiping Vasudev? Yet Pada Pankaj Palash Vilasa Bhaktya. So yeah, his lotus feet, the petals on his lotus feet, Pada Pankaj Palash Vilasa. He says Vilasa means Vishesha Rupena Las. He says these are very attractive. Their beauty is constantly increasing. And the nectar that they contain gives Vilas, gives great delight. So Bhaktya, when one delights in them with Bhakti, then Karmashayam Gatitam. Karmashayam means the remnants of karma that are there, impressions that are there, gatitam udgratayanti. They are deep rooted, but from their deep roots, they will be ripped out. And those people who can do it are Santaha. They are very wise people. They are very good people. And next verse, he compares these people with the Jnanis. So he says, Kruchro Mahaniha Bhavarnava Plavesham
Kruchro Mahaniha Bhavarnava Plavesham
Shadvargo Nakrama Sukhe Natiti Rishanti
Shadvargo Nakrama Sukhe Natiti Rishanti
Taptvam Hare Bhagavato Bhajaniya Mangrim
Taptvam Hare Bhagavato Bhajaniya Mangrim
Krupvodupam Vyasanam Uttara Dustarana Dustararanam
Krupvodupam Vyasanam Uttara Dustararanam.
So Dustararanam, that is very difficult to go out. So this ocean is there, very difficult to cross. And Kuchro Maha, they make great endeavor. Iha Bhavarnam, this ocean. But their problem is Aplavesham, they don't have any plava. Lava is a boat. So they don't have the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord. So they make great endeavor, great endeavor. Shadvarga nakram asukhena tirshanti. So they say the shadvarga is what? The six. Shadvarga can refer to the senses and the five senses in the mind. It can also refer to the six and alphas. Nakram, they are like the sharks. So first of all, crossing the ocean is difficult itself. And on top of that, the ocean, there are sharks. What will a person do? Shadvarga nakram asukhena tirshanti. If at all they succeed in crossing, they will get exhausted. And many of them may get too old. Some of them may be able to cross over. Very few of them. Therefore, don't try that method. Tattvam Hare Bhagavata Bhajaniyam. Worship Lord Hari. And by that, you can go beyond this. And Udupam. So his lotus feet will be like the boat for you. So actually speaking, if you systematically understand the philosophy, then you understand how important it is to take shelter of Krishna. And how that makes things easy for us. So we were looking at this point here, where we discussed these verses. And what are the conditioned souls trying, those are Jnanis, they are trying to do? They are trying to fight with this triple force of mind, mammons and maya single-handedly, without taking shelter of Krishna. And that is not possible. So of course, you may say that serving Krishna is also not easy. Yes, it is not easy. But once we get into a service of Krishna, many times we find that our mind gets disturbed, mind gets agitated, mind gets tempted. So it is very difficult at that time to fix the mind of Krishna or to engage in Krishna's service. But if somehow we can tolerate that period when I have forced myself to engage in Krishna's service, once we get engaged, then the temptation is vanishes and we get absorbed in it. So whereas for the impersonalist, practically the absorption of the higher taste is not there. So it's a constant battle. So Krishna is saying that this is how a person cannot go beyond. Now, Arjuna is describing over here, these people don't know me because they are covered by illusion. Then actually Arjuna has a question, that okay, yoga maya samamuta, yoga maya is, people can't see you because of yoga maya, but does that mean that yoga maya covers you also? No. If at all somebody has the idea that Krishna is covered by yoga maya, the next verse makes it very clear. Vedaham samatitani
Vartamanani
charjuna
Vartamanani charjuna
Bhavi भविष्यानि च भूतानि
भविष्यानि च भूतानि
मान्तु वेदन कश्चन
मान्तु वेदन कश्चन.
So I know everything and everyone, past, present and future, but me, no one knows. Vedana kashchana. Even a few people, they also don't know. What Krishna is telling here is the rarity about knowing, of knowing him. Vedana kashchana. Now this raises the, this was, Krishna is talking about his omniscience. God has these three attributes. Which are the three attributes? Defining attributes, omniscience, omnipotence, omnipresence. So omnipresence Krishna will demonstrate through the Vishwarupa. Omniscience he is demonstrating here. And what about the omnipresence? Third, omniscience, omnipresence and omnipotence. So where does Krishna demonstrate his omnipotence? In the Bhagavad Gita. His supreme potency.
11th chapter, yeah, 11th chapter also was there, of course.
But he says how he is destroying everyone as Kala. Omniscience is talked about here in 7:26. It was hinted at earlier in reply to Arjuna's question in 4.5. Bahuni ne nittani janmani tvacharna. I don't forget anything. There are many other verses also, of course, there. So omnipresence is 11th chapter, universal form. We'll discuss about many verses which talk about this. But omnipotence. So when Krishna talks about his omnipotence, how do we know his omnipotence? Actually, especially it is being talked about in the 10th chapter. He's talking about vibhuti. He's talking about how all energy comes from him. All potencies come from him. And of course, the whole Mahabharata war that falls after this exhibits Krishna's omnipotency. How he was able to cover the sun to protect Arjuna, how he is able to do all sorts of miraculous things by which the Pandavas are saved from danger. So now, this omniscience is something which raises the question, if God is omniscient, then does he know the future? If he knows the future, then does that mean that he knows what we are going to do? If he knows what we are going to do, then does that mean that we don't have free will? It's a standard series of questions which comes up. And the problem with this series of questions is that it assumes that knowledge means control. Actually, there's a difference between knowledge and control.
What is the question here?
Does God's omniscience take away our free will? If God knows the future, then does that mean all of us are like programmed beings?
So the answer is God's knowledge of the future is like our knowledge of the past. What does it mean? It is awareness without intervention.
So I know what I did yesterday. But does that information enable me to change anything? No. You know, okay, I slept late yesterday. Information without intervention. So I can't change anything. I know it, but I can't change it. Now, Krishna says it is not that he can't change, but he doesn't change without intervention. So it's just like somebody existing outside the time dimension. What happens in the time dimension is different. Is there something is observing? Krishna is not controlling that. So Krishna doesn't take away our free will, but he knows how our free will will act. But does that knowing take away anything? Actually, sometimes we have excessive intellectual mode because we think knowledge is very important. Actually, what is it? Even if somebody argues, say, okay, if Krishna knows that I am going to go back to world only after 100 lifetimes, then why should I practice Krishna consciousness now? I practice only after 99 lifetimes, 100 lifetimes I practice Krishna consciousness. So the idea is that, actually speaking, more important than knowledge is the reciprocation of love. You know, if knowledge or what is important, then there is no point in Krishna performing his leelas. Because Krishna knows the script completely. He's only written the script. You remember I discussed earlier about how Krishna is the script writer, Maya is the director, and Krishna is the actor. So Krishna knows everything. But then why does Krishna perform his leela? Because there is a reciprocation of love over there. So more important than knowledge is the reciprocation of love. So even if it, for argument's sake, were true that we are going to go back to our only after 100 lifetimes, but if we practice Krishna consciousness now, then for those 100 lifetimes we will be reciprocating love with Krishna in the material world, and we will be happy as much as possible in this world, and we will be doing good to this world. So we will be as much as if we are not in the world. Because if we are loving Krishna and reciprocating with him, it's as almost for all practical people, it's like the spiritual world. So therefore, the important thing is to recognize that our process does not emphasize knowledge so much. Knowledge has its importance. So even if Krishna knows and Krishna sees our sincerity in trying to surrender, that pleases him. And that invokes his mercy from our heart. So therefore, this is a vexed question, and there are no straight answers for this, but the important principle is that Krishna doesn't interfere with our free will. And when we exercise our free will, it is to express our love. It is not just to get a particular result. Now when I am trying to serve Krishna, it is not just so that, you know, as quickly as I can get out of this world and go back to Godhead. You know, one devotee asked me this question, you know, if we go back to Godhead, won't we get bored? Because now we have some goal to our life, but then we will have no goal. Isn't it? Now we have the goal to go back to Godhead. What is the goal after that? We already come to Godhead. We need some other goal. It's like, you know, I cracked my SSC. Now what exam is next to crack? HSC. Then I cracked my whatever, JEE exam. Then what exam do I crack after that? So okay, I cracked Maya and went back to Godhead. What, whom text do I crack now? So that is a very mundane idea. Actually speaking, our goal is not just to go back to God. Our goal is to enter into a reciprocation of love with Krishna. And we can do that even in this world also. So now after this, Krishna talks about, okay, so he's contrasting here. This verse says that he is not under Maya. But then, okay, if he's not under Maya, how do other souls come under Maya? That Krishna describes in the next verse.
Ichchādvesha-samuddhena
Dvandva-mohena-bhārata
Sarva-bhūtāni-sammoham
Sarge-yānti-parantapa
So, deluded by Ichchā and Dvesha. So, by attraction and aversion, by desire and hatred, Dvanda mohena, these two create a moha, and because of this moha, sarva bhutani sammoham sarge, all living entities come under this material existence. This verse to some extent can indicate how we take repeated birth in this world as long as we have Ichha and Dvesha, and it can also indicate how we in this world have the propensity to succumb, how we originally came to this world also. Because we had Ichha to, we had Dvesha of Krishna and Ichha to imitate him. That's how we came to this world. So now, and how can somebody come out of Maya? Yesham tvantagatam papam.
Yesham tvantagatam papam.
Jananam punya karmana.
Jananam punya karmana.
Te dvanda moha nirmukta.
Te dvanda moha nirmukta.
Bhajante mama drudhavrataha. So when they become free from sins, antagatam papam, and they do punya karmana, then what will happen? They will become free from the dhamma, and they will become bhajante ma drudhavrataha. So actually, if Krishna's mercy is extended to us through devotees, then we can start practicing devotional service even when we are sinful, even when we are not accumulated pious creeds. But we cannot become bhajante drudhavrataha. Bhajante drudhavrataha will happen after there is anartha nivritti. This verse is talking about a state of nishtha. Vajante Dudavata happens after Dhanathirvittir, Antagatam Papam, and we have done Agyat Suprati, we have done Bhakti, we have done Punya. Then we can actually start practicing Bhakti in a steady way. So till that time, we will be doing bhajan, but it will not be Dhrudavata, it will be a Dhrudavata. It will be like a sine wave going up and down. But gradually, it will move beyond the sine wave and it will become steady. So now, after describing this, now Krishna, in one sense, is seeing how attentively Arjuna is hearing. So he drops some new terms over there. It's the first time Krishna does this in the Bhagavad Gita. Till now, all the questions have been sort of initiated by Arjuna. Of course, fourth chapter, we can say, Imam Vivasvate Yogam Krishna is telling at that time. It's question provoking. How could he have acknowledged the Son God? But still, that was not a direct dropping of new terms. So here Krishna will drop several new terms and Arjuna will ask the questions, which will start the 8th chapter after that. Jaramarana Mokshaya.
Jaramarana Mokshaya.
Mama Shritte Tantiye.
Mama Shritte Tantiye.
Te Brahma Tadvidu Krishnam.
Te Brahma Tadvidu Krishnam.
Adhyatmam Karma Chakhilam.
Adhyatmam Karma Chakhilam.
So, Jaramarana Mokshaya. So, the Acharya describe that this is reference to a fifth category of person who surrenders to Krishna. So, there are four categories of people earlier. So, there was one was Jnani, means one was wants to strike a personal relationship. And Jignasu is one who is inquisitive. Artho is one who is distressed. But this is a person who has knowledge of the miseries of material existence. And there the Artho was, he's having some material miseries and he wants the relief at a material level. Here, this person is approaching for the sake of liberation. So this can be a Jnana Mishra Bhakta or a Yoga Mishra Bhakta. And Krishna will compare these with Shuddha Bhaktas, Kevala Bhaktas in the 8th chapter. So they come to Krishna Mama Ashrita, means they are taking shelter of Krishna. Their goal may be to go back to the abode of Krishna or to do bhakti as a means to mukti. Either way. Mama Ashrita Etantiye. So they Brahma Tadvidhu Krishnam. So they are Brahma, Krishna is saying. They are Brahma. They know everything. If they take shelter of me in this way, and Adhyatma Karma Chakhilam. They actually are Adhyatma and they know karma completely. So here Krishna has introduced three new words, Brahma, Adhyatma and Karma. And Krishna will ask about this in the next chapter. Sadhi Bhutadi Daivamma.
Sadhi Bhutadi Daivamma.
Sadhi Yajnam Chaye Viduho.
Sadhi Yajnam Chaye Viduho.
Prayana Kale Pichamam.
Prayana Kale Pichamam.
Devi Duryukta Chetasaha.
Devi Duryukta Chetasaha.
So those who are Yukta Chetasaha like that, they can know even at the time of death, what? They can know three things about me. These are similar to Bhaktaram Yavitasam. Adhi Bhuta, Adhi Daiva, Adhi Yajna. So what are these terms? We will discuss in the next chapter. But essentially, this has got something to do, they will understand me as the absolute truth. And they will understand me like this even at the time of death. So, there are these, Krishna will ask about Adhibhut, Adhidaiva and Adhiyati, Arjuna will ask to Krishna. So there are six terms which Krishna will be asked about. And the seventh is Prayana Kal Vidhu. How will they know at the time of death? That takes practically the full 8th chapter. So this is how the link between 7th and 8th chapter is there. And in this chapter, what did Krishna do? Krishna gave his knowledge and told how one should surrender. And those who don't surrender to Krishna, why they don't surrender? They are covered by Maya. How they can come out of Maya and how can they surrender to Him? That is also described by Krishna. So this was the chapter called, what was the name of the chapter? Knowledge of the Absolute. So, Jnana Vidyana Yoga, this is called in Sanskrit. 7.2 verse. So there Krishna is talking about Himself and how to realize Himself. So 7.1 to 12 is Jnana. And then 13 to 30 is Vidyana, how one can know Him, how one can surrender to Him. Let's talk about in this chapter. So we'll continue after you come back. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki
jai,
Krishna Prabhupada ki
jai,
Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Gaura Prema.